Theory checking in nationally on the NBA here as the season's through 10 games, 10 plus here. It's rolling along already. We have quite a few developments around the NBA. Crazy stories over the last couple games here. Couple fights. Hot start for the Celtics, and we will start with them. Picking up the pieces from Philly last night. It's a crazy arena to record in, Nate, so I wasn't on for too long last night. The Wi-Fi kind of stinks. They're crashing and banging stuff left and right, trying to change over the court. So this is a good game. I know you didn't catch a ton of it, but Embiid struggled. Horford rejuvenated in a spot start here. The Celtics beat the Sixers without Porzingis, without Jalen. Had some guys who really haven't played all season contribute here. And overall, their start, dominant. One of the best offensive teams. The defense has been excellent here. Porzingis, as advertised after the season he had in Washington a year ago. Drew Holiday, everything so far. He's even rebounding 7 a game. And Tatum's in that MVP mix and scoring 30 points a game here. So it's hard not to say, from my perspective, that they're not the team to beat right now. And I had all the respect in the world for Denver coming into this year, Nate. But they just lost Jamal Murray for maybe up to a month here with a hamstring injury. And Jokic has been dominant. He's right there with Tatum. I'll even throw Anthony Edwards, who we'll get to in a little bit, into that mix for MVP right now. But when you look at Denver and what they're going through and how good the Celtics look, I think you have to swing championship favorite status over to Boston, at least for now. And I know it's early, but it's all we can talk about.
Yeah, for sure. I think that there's a few teams that still need to get their footing. We're going to talk about the Clippers later. Milwaukee still going through their struggles with Giannis and Damian Lillard trying to find that chemistry as well. So there's still a few teams that we're expecting to kind of turn up. But so far, the Celtics definitely are the favorites. I don't know about Tatum being the lead favorite for MVP because Nikola Jokic exists, but I will say that compared to previous years, I'm more willing to entertain that conversation.
Yeah, and I wonder if he can do it. I told you going into the season, I had this take developing that he's such an inconsistent shooter, his game comes in waves, and he's on such a great team that maybe we won't see Tatum win MVP during his career. I know he's so young and he's going to have years and years and years to do it here. But there's so many guys that are just massive stats performers, which is a big factor in this award, on teams where they're the lone guy who's doing everything, whereas Jason's paired with Jalen and now a couple other stars here. But the production's undeniable so far. A massive closing stretch against the Knicks on Monday with 4 threes. He's shooting well, which he hasn't done in a couple of years. And he's even pulling out those mid-range looks right now, which have come and gone throughout his career, but overall haven't been a big part of his attack. The passing's been good. Even defensively, he'll come up and make some big stops. I know Joe's been big on his individual efforts on defense. So this is kind of how it started for Boston last year, and I think it's a little bit different because they've won some games late. They've had games where they haven't shot great, but they've still figured out how to win. And there are a couple slip-ups last week against Philly, the Minnesota one. You did have a couple shots late in those games to tie or win. So you could even be talking about a 10-1 start here, 11-0. But the bigger sample size right now has been them building massive number advantages on teams. And I'll throw this at you, Nate. I know you don't totally agree on Tatum, but you do love plus minus. And if you're looking at this plus minus leaders in the NBA right now, Tatum is a massive, massive leader in plus minus. Right now he is plus 180. The second place player is Holiday at 132. Jokic is plus 120. So Tatum's 60 points higher than Jokic. And I know there's that 50-point win over the Pacers that probably accounts for much of that difference. But he's killing everybody in plus-minus. I think per 100, the Celtics are plus 30 with Tatum on the court. He's just been ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, I think that you kind of contradict your point, though, because after you mentioned Tatum, you also mentioned Drew Holiday. And if your teammate is also in the similar category of plus-minus as you are, it kind of hurts the impact of the plus minus versus a Jokic who, like you said, Jamal Murray. I'm not sure how long he's going to be out. I think you said like a month, maybe like a month and a half. So we have to see that. But how I see it is Jokic is once again in a position where he's going to have to do it by himself. And we have seen him do it time in and time out again, especially over the course of regular seasons, him carrying Denver to wins. And I don't expect anything different. So that being said, and also you mentioning that Jokic is third in plus minus also helps prove my point that I think Jokic should be the favorite for MVP right now.
Let's see this too, because this is always a big one for Jokic. Tatum, when he's off the court, the Celtics are -9 per 100. When Jokic is off the court for Denver so far, they are -8. So it's similar. It's close. Mm-hmm. That's always been a big one for Jokic, is that the team just falls apart when he's off the floor. And the Celtics didn't do a great job with Tatum off the floor last year either, but so far this year, they've dominated when he's been out there, and they've had a tough time winning stretches without him on the floor. These last two games are really the only two times that they've been able to do that so far. But I got to give the early edge to Tatum. It's close. There's a couple other guys in that mix. No, you know me. I'm tough on Tatum.
But it's just the fact that in the same breath, you said Jrue Holiday also has a similar plus minus. In that, because from my perspective, MVP is most valuable player. So if your teammate has a similar plus minus to you, that honestly, it's early in the season, but Jrue Holiday having a similar plus minus to Tatum might kind of disqualify Tatum from the conversation in general, if I'm being honest with you, just because like
he's not disqualified. That's silly.
I mean, but it's just the fact that like it's just if Jrue Holiday is having a similar value on the team as Tatum, according to plus minus, that tells me that what Tatum is doing, it can be replicated by another player on his team. So by that logic, he can't be the most valuable because you could get the same value from Jrue Holiday on the court, if you're following my logic.
It's still a 48-point difference between the two, though.
It is, but
sizable.
It is a sizable difference, but again,
and I'll throw this at you too. Jokic is 120. KCP 117, and then Gordon 109. So the fact that, you know, a lot of these players play together during these stretches. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a big factor in the reason why Holiday is up there with Tatum, and Derek White's up there too. Porzingis is up there. The guy
One
who's
thing
actually
I will say is that we're not nobody with a brain is going to compare KCP to Jrue Holiday.
Right.
Nobody with a brain. So Jrue Holiday is what, like maybe a top 40, top 50 player. KCP isn't even in the conversation in general. So
yeah,
just understanding the caliber of players that we're talking about and understanding the impacts that we've seen Jrue Holiday make a huge impact in Milwaukee winning a championship. KCP was really good. He did not make the impact that Jrue Holiday did. So just understanding that, this qualifying might be a little harsh, but just for the sake, it's 10 games, it's 11 games. We're all doing hyperbole right now. Just looking at it from that standpoint and understanding how much Jrue Holiday is adding to the team right now, it kind of takes away from Tatum's case.
Right now, I do like NBA references, MVP tracker. It's not totally accurate, but they got Jokic 1. Embiid's still in that mix at 32-11-6, but we'll get to him in a second here. He's not in this mix. I think we both agree. Halliburton should be. They have the number one offense, historic offense so far, with a team that's not like, that great.
Didn't he have like 52 assists and like no turnovers or something crazy like that over the past 2-3
games?
Game
stretch, yeah.
He's I know it was definitely no turnovers. I don't know how many assists.
He's averaging 12.5 assists, which is just silly.
Yeah.
And 2 turnovers a game. So his assist to turnover rate is what, 6-1?
Yeah. Put him in the Hall of Fame off of that alone, honestly, at this point.
While shooting 44% from three. I mean, the guy's going to make all NBA this year. He's just one of the best players in the league, bar none.
Literally no reason to care about the Pacers other than Tyrese Halliburton, honestly.
I mean, he's sad against the Celtics and they lost by 50. That's the kind of impact he has right now. Maxi too. You got to put Maxi in the mix, and he's among these plus minus leaders right now at plus 103. which no other teammate of his is really in the mix. Paul Reed, 62. So, and Harris is 68.
Shout out B-Ball Paul.
You know, he's way above those guys if you want to talk about teammates being, you know, plus minus splits too. Barrett is up there for the Knicks. Halliburton's plus 81 for the Pacers. The only other guy I think worth mentioning here is Shea at plus 74, but
okay,
they haven't been great. Your guy Dylan Brooks is up there, though, plus 69.
No comment.
We're not going to talk Rockets today, no, but...
I mean, it's nice to see them starting to have a culture. I think that Dylan Brooks is playing a part in that, but also having Ime Udoka, also having Fred VanVleet. You're actually having vets who have had varying levels of success in the NBA teaching these young guys how to play. And I think that the player that it's really, really going to rub off on the most is Alperen Sengun, who I'm really excited to see his development now.
Do you see shades of Jokic with him, like people say?
Of course. I saw it before. I saw it 2 years ago. Just the feel for the game, the way he's not, he's starting to become a better shooter. He's not the shooter that Jokic is. So he doesn't really quite space the floor in the same way, but the passing ability, the way that he's able to get these different passing angles and stuff like that. I definitely see the comparisons between him and Jokic.
He's plus 57, a little bit down this list, but still one of the leaders here. Let's talk a little Sixers, though, since they're the losers in this game. They beat the Celtics last week in impressive fashion a week before this, so back-to-back Philly trips here, getting them out of the way early. But they lose Oubre. They're starting Covington now after this Harden trade, which, you know, we went back and forth a little bit last night. Sure, great hustle guy, can still defend a little bit, but you don't want to be starting Covington if you're trying to contend for the conference. And Morris, love the guy to death, great Celtic. He's had a nice career here. Not looking good physically at this point after his Clippers tenure came to a rocky end there. So they don't have much depth at that wing spot aside from Harris. And Embiid's been playing terrible in some of these key games, especially against the Celtics here. Brutal performance last night. And, you know, you've mentioned the playoff resume with him starting to stack against him there. Maxey's been impressive, of course, but you still worry about the defense with him. And the shooting, too, for stretches. You know, he's shot better in recent years. But
he's pretty streaky.
Streaky shooter. And there's not much depth beyond those names we mentioned there. I like the coach. It was a good hire. Yeah. but you have this weird Oubre situation going on now. Apparently there's some doubt being cast about his story of getting hit by the car. And
I mean, let me clear that up right now. Typically, people who experience traumatic events like Kelly Oubre has have difficulty remembering the exact moment or the situation leading up to the moment. So this isn't really anything surprising to me. The possibility of this, of him lying, is so slim to me. But I will say that if it comes out that he did lie, that's really, really bad. But I just don't see how someone lies about being hit by a car.
We'll see.
You're hearing that he has broken ribs. Like everything seems to be consistent, except for the fact that, well, not even except for the fact, because like I said, people who experience traumatic trauma in that way often have tough times remembering things. Everything from what someone is going through after a car crash seems to be consistent to me. So, I mean, it's good to have that information out there, but I don't really think it really casts doubt on Kelly Oubre.
Yeah, and you got the video you mentioned there of him coming in with the bike, and did he get hit riding the bike? Is he fooling around on the bike? I don't know. We'll see. But either way, he's going to miss a sizable amount of time here, which is just a massive blow to them. He was a big part of what they were doing. I liked where they were at a week ago, but I think you are starting to see them come down to earth a little bit here. And Nurse is going to keep them in the mix. Embiid, Maxey should be able to make them a playoff team at the very least here. But you're questioning their ceiling. And we talked about it, Nate. I think they have to go out and make a move like a LaVine just to keep them afloat, just to give
Absolutely
them that top echelon talent alongside their two stars there. And you know Maxey's going to be with you for the long haul here, but If you have a first-round flameout, there's a chance Embiid could be asking out of here next summer.
Here is my response to you, and it's one stat, and I'm pretty sure you know what the stat I'm going to say is. In the Boston Celtics series, James Harden had two 40-point games, 40-point playoff games. Joel, those two playoff games, 40-point playoff games, are more playoff games than Joel Embiid has had his entire playoff career. Embiid is a great player. There are times, like we saw last night, at least looking at the highlights, looking at how Al Horford was guarding him. I was watching it and I'm like, some of the shots that he's taking is just like, bro, like you're 7'3", you're the biggest person on the court, get to the basket. Some of the shots, like some of his strategy in trying to score is kind of puzzling at times. It seems like he just forgets how to play his style of basketball at times. And for that reason, I don't see why Joel Embiid should ask out. I think that the front office has been really funny with players, and maybe that could be a reason why if it's something off the court. But in terms of on the court production, Joel Embiid has to step up. He has no one to blame but himself. He was the MVP last year. He averaged 31 points per game. In the playoffs, he only averaged like 21 or 22 points per game. That's a 10-point difference, or nearly a 10-point difference. That's inexcusable. You're a top three player in the league. Be a top three player in the league. Show us. Simple as that.
I can't disagree. Last year was bad, and he had that passing piece in Harden who helped push him to the MVP status, and there's plenty of blame on Harden, too, for how the summer went and where they're at now. But they've started well here. We'll see if this turns into a downturn for them. I think this start allows them to be patient here, along with a Batum who was out last night, too. I don't know what's going on with him personal, but he'll be back soon, apparently. So maybe those pieces keep them afloat. I just think they have to do something by the deadline here. And we will get to LaVine now since we mentioned him. Mm-hmm. Your Bulls, they're terrible. I mean, did you see the ending to last night's game?
Why would I torture myself? Bobby, you know I care. You know I'm into self-care and you know I love myself. Why would I torture myself by watching the Chicago Bulls?
So they lost by two to my Magic, who have owned them these last couple of years here with the trade and everything else. And they have like 6-7 seconds left, and Patrick Williams runs the floor and puts up like this one-handed floater from 15 feet that just went off the backboard, and that was that. So they are now 4-8. If I'm pulling up the stats on both sides of the ball here, I have to imagine they rank pretty low on both ends here. And there really isn't cohesiveness between the stars. All you've heard is disagreement about the offense, disagreement between coach and players here. The 25th in offense, defensively, they are 17th. So they're minus 3.7. The depth isn't great. You know, I know Coby White's giving them something here, and there's a few players you like, but this Patrick Williams thing hasn't gone well. Ball's not coming back anytime soon, if ever. And it just looks like time to blow this thing up. And I know their ownership doesn't really believe in that. I don't know what you're waiting for here. DeRozan's going to be a free agent. LaVine isn't really leading you anywhere. So it makes sense that this report's coming out that they're going to look to a trade here. And I'd have to imagine it's going to take up until the deadline, as these things usually do. But this is a guy, I don't love him. But I do think in the right situation, he'd help. And I'll throw Philly on that list just because they have that defensive center in Embiid. This guy can focus more on offense. He can focus more on defense, Embiid, that is. I like the Magic going after him if these two teams want to link up on a trade again. You know, just consolidating their guards a little bit. You know, and you can get some nice guards from Orlando if you're Chicago, including Fultz, maybe. Lakers, I don't think I like it. Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to think about that one a little bit more. And then Spurs, I see floating around, you know, just to get a piece next to Wembanyama. I don't know about that one. So, I don't know. I like Magic. Spurs, Pacers are a little interesting, too, just because they're all offense. So, why not add another firepower piece here and just send Heald back or whatever for the Bulls to flip again? So, I don't know. Where do you see this going? This is your team here, so I'll lob this one your way.
Before I address that, Bobby, can you tell the audience when I started saying that the Bulls should trade DeRozan and LaVine?
It was a while ago, but I think it was pretty apparent.
it was before last season's trade deadline. DeRozan was an all-star at the time, and Zach LaVine, he still had the luster. I don't think DeRozan is nearly as attractive as he was maybe six, what is it, like, we're in November right now.
I like DeRozan as a trade.
10 months ago. No, he's not. The thing about him is that
he needs to come off a bench somewhere.
Okay, so that means you don't like him. The LaVine thing, I think that out of all the teams that you listed, addressing your point now, I think I like the Spurs the best, only because I understand that Greg Popovich is one of the best coaches of all time. You can argue the best coach of all time. That being said,
he's pulling a builder.
It's his show. No, he's not. He's still the issue is that they just haven't had the talent. But yeah, you could, when you watch them play, they play hard every single night. They still do what they're supposed to do. They just don't have the talent. And I think Zach LaVine fits into that. Zach LaVine is a very talented scorer. Everything else is kind of iffy. The reason why I don't like Zach LaVine on the Philadelphia 76ers is because that takes the ball out of Tyrese Maxey's hand. And additionally, I don't really see how Zach LaVine benefits the team. I understand that they might need another scorer. I understand that Zach LaVine, like I just said before, is a good scorer. However, you have Tyrese Maxey, you have Joel Embiid, and then you have Tobias Harris. Those three players, with Tobias Harris being the third option, should give you enough offense for you to win. You need defense at this point. And you also have the Anthony Melton starting, and then you put Rocco in there. And Rocco is still a solid defender. Could probably take some of the load off of Tobias Harris or Tyrese Maxey.
He's just not a starter, though.
Yeah, but again, this goes back to what we were talking about last topic. Joel Embiid, show us why you're a top three player in the league.
Yeah, that's you're going up against a Boston team that has Porzingis, Holiday, Tatum, and Brown, a Milwaukee team with Giannis and Lillard, and a, I guess that's the list of contenders in this awful East. But
in terms of ceiling, you have not mentioned anyone who has a higher ceiling than Joel Embiid. Tatum is amazing. If Joel Embiid is playing,
higher than Embiid's.
No, he's not. No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
It's not. Joel Embiid is a
game seven.
Joel, because Tatum is more consistent.
Has Embiid ever scored 50 in the playoffs?
No. But I'm saying, in terms of their, when you look at their talent, and when you think about when they take their talent and they actually play up to their talent, which player has a higher ceiling? It's Joel Embiid, easily. Joel Embiid can guard the perimeter. He does have to do it. That's what I'm saying. So that's why I'm saying that it's up to Joel Embiid to show us why he's a top three player. When you're talking about Giannis, Joel Embiid can shoot better than Giannis. Everything else, Giannis is better in the perimeter, or not in the perimeter, in the paint. Giannis is a more hungry defender, but overall they're basically the same defensively. Joel Embiid right there, like Joel Embiid has that talent to be better than Giannis. He has a talent to be better than Jason Tatum. He has a talent to be better than Damian Lillard. Has he done it? No. He hasn't.
Who could they beat in the East? I think you say no to the Celtics right now.
Is Joel Embiid actually playing like a top three player? That's my question. Because it really just comes down to Joel Embiid.
He hasn't. So I think you have to assume he's not going to. But he's also been
hurt
in these postseasons. Yeah, so that's where I'm at too.
Like I agree with you that we haven't seen it, but again, like when you're just looking at the skill set and you're just looking at the frame, you're looking at the size. He's you can argue besides Jokic, he's the most talented player in the league. Genuinely. He just doesn't put it together the way that we want him to put it together. But he can score from 3-point range, he can score from mid range, he can score in the paint. He has a handle. He defends on the perimeter and in the paint. He's a rim protector. He's a good rebounder. What more could you want out of a player?
I think I agree with this. We're talking about imaginary. We're doing hypotheticals like we do in the chat here.
Definitely. Definitely. But again, all I'm saying is that Joel Embiid needs to show up and he needs to prove to us why he's a top three player. That's it. That's all I'm saying.
No, you can't. Yeah, no, we'll
you
see.
You cannot
we'll
argue
see
that J.R. Smith has more talent than Kobe Bryant. What are we doing?
I said it earlier. This Embiid Boston thing getting so crazy at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just kill him every single time, and they leave him looking like a fool too at the end of it. He was in the locker room last night saying they're the best team, and you know, we've heard him say years ago this isn't a rivalry because they always beat us and blah 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 blah. So they're in a bad place if they end up against Boston right now, at least a fully loaded Boston. But this wasn't even a fully loaded Boston last night. Where do you think LaVine will end up if you had to predict?
Oh man, I honestly don't know. I like the Spurs a lot. I think I saw someone say the Raptors. I do like that a lot as well.
I don't know if the Raptors have anything left.
I just
Grady
don't.
Dick playing the way he is.
Why? Can we talk about basketball without mentioning that man, please? Like, why do you always have to bring up Grady Dick? Why do you always have to do that, Bobby?
I think he has a lot of potential. We're talking potential right now.
Anyway. I don't think the Lakers have a realistic trade package to get Zach LaVine. I would like to see what the Spurs can put together. I think that the Sixers could put something together, but it just doesn't make sense for the chemistry of their team. I would like to see what the Raptors could put together. But if I had to, you know, in Nate's world, where would Zach LaVine end up in terms of that would make sense and would make me happy as a basketball fan? San Antonio.
I think the Magic can probably offer the most, mm-hmm. especially if they want to put a first in there, because they haven't traded any first that I know of. They need an offensive initiator at guard. They have Jalen Suggs, who I'd hesitate to get rid of. Fultz, I wouldn't love it, but he is a free agent this summer, and you do have to start picking between some of these guards, and they just signed Anthony. Suggs, I'd be patient with. I don't want to give up on him yet. And then you have Anthony Black, who needs more time and opportunity here as a rookie. So I think I'd trade Fultz, Gary Harris or something like that, you know, who the Bulls can flip here, and maybe a first.
Does that work money-wise, though? Because Zach LaVine has the, what is it, $250 million contract? That's the other thing, too. That's also the reason why I don't think the Lakers have a shot of producing a palatable trade package for the Bulls. Unless they're going to trade Anthony Davis. And even then, like, Anthony Davis isn't looking great.
Let's see. Bulls, LaVine is making $40 million. And we probably need to get to like 35
a share. Is this the trade machine?
Yes.
Is it? getting a peek behind the curtain here.
So okay. Fultz makes 17. That's pretty good.
Okay.
That gets you halfway there. Darren Harris at 13. Is that enough on its own? Let's see. No, we need a little more. Let's find another money here. You don't want to trade Mo Wagner.
No.
You want Isaac
Carter Jr. maybe? Stop it.
You're going to have to take Okiki or something. Just some money down here.
I know they like what Okiki. About Goga Bitadze?
Yeah, maybe he'll be enough. Let's see. Yeah, there you go.
Okay. And all the picks that the Magic can give.
No. You'll get one protected first.
No, I think... Yeah. I think
that's
Zach LaVine is worth
LaVine's
at least
on a
two.
Big contract, and his knees are kind of hurt, so you might get a protected first from the Magic here.
That is disgusting.
Well, I think anyone else is just giving salary. The Sixers will be sending Covington and Morris and all that stuff.
I just want to say,
Spurs will send a McDermott.
And Bobby, I need you to co-sign this. I was completely against giving Zach LaVine that money in the first place. It just never made any sense to me.
Yeah.
It never did. I felt like he hit his ceiling already. And I just don't see, I just haven't seen any growth from him in the past 3 years, besides him being a more prolific scorer.
It's gotten worse.
But there's just so many other things that to be a successful basketball player you have to do besides scoring. And nothing really comes to mind when we talk about the other areas for Zach LaVine in terms of him being successful.
He's also been a focal point for this offense. The teams can key in on him. Not a ton of spacing on the wings. It's just a bad situation in Chicago. Mm-hmm. I don't think the coaching's been great either. I mean, I have no ill will toward the Bulls. I liked that team a couple of years ago. They put together here. Ball made it all pop. He was another guy who could space the floor for them. And Vucevic wasn't a great trade, but he does play well in spots here. And if Ball was there, I think he'd make a little bit more sense. That's another contract they probably didn't need to sign last summer, bringing him back. So I don't know. It's a mess there. The ownership's bad, as you always talk about. Yep. Management's been terrible. Donovan's probably going to have to go here, and they're going to have to find someone else. So they're gonna be starting over here, it looks like, and they're not going to get a ton back for these guys, which is even worse.
Yeah. Who's the next Wemby? That's what we need to tank for.
Next two drafts, not much as far as I know.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, you could get Maine's Cooper Flagg.
Well, I mean, hey, at least Chicago fans have football to look forward to. Oh, my fault.
Hockey hasn't been great there, and baseball.
Hey. I'm starting to see rumors about the Cubs stopping being cheap and getting ready to offer a substantial offer to Ohtani. If that happens, I'm buying an Ohtani Cubs jersey tomorrow or the next day after they sign him.
At Red Sox level.
No, it's not.
They look more
competent.
A little bit.
They just hired Craig Counsell. The team was good. If their closer didn't get hurt towards the end of the season, they were fun to watch. Like, if the closer didn't get hurt towards the end of the season, they probably make the playoffs.
They have to sign a lot of people back, though, don't they?
Just Bellinger, off the top of my head. It seems like they're trying to get Pete Alonso from the Mets. I don't think that's going to happen. I'd consider him top two. I don't know if he's his ace. I think if he's their ace, I'd say Justin Steele probably is. But I think they can replace that with some person to hold the spot until Ohtani's arm gets better. But yeah, I like what they're doing. I like what I'm hearing from them. And if they get Ohtani, I'm back.
All right, there's a Chicago talk. We'll take a quick break here to tell you about FanDuel. FanDuel, great for nights like this. Couple NBA games, hockey rolling along. If you want to do some baseball futures, they have them, but early in the offseason, so we'll focus on football. Great football game tonight, Ravens-Bengals, as we record this. We're going to jump off and watch that in a minute. Rare Thursday night special, Nate, that isn't Bears-Panthers or something like that. So I'm excited about that. And it's all the more fun when you go to FanDuel. That's why they say make every moment more. And when you place a money line bet, which is the kind Nate likes here, just pick the team, forget the line, who's going to win.
Yo.
Who you got tonight? Ravens.
Ravens.
Bengals. And right now on FanDuel, I have to imagine the Ravens are favorites. It's probably pretty close. We have, as far as the money line goes, -196. So the Ravens are 3.5-point favorites, and the Bengals are +164. So +3.5 for them. Slight edge to the Ravens at home. If you go over there, bet the Ravens money line, you're going to get $150 in bonus bets if you win. That's FanDuel.com/Boston. All you have to do is pick a winner. You're going to get $150 in bonus bets. 21 plus, present in Mass. First online real money wager only. Bonus bets expire 7 days after receipt. And, of course, a non-withdrawable. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. That's FanDuel.com/Boston. Let's talk about it. Draymond, I don't know what the hell he was doing. I never really know what the hell he's doing. Why'd he go after Rudy? 0-0 game. Clay gets his jersey ripped, and all of a sudden, I think Ahmed, our producer, put this together for last night. Draymond had him like this.
That's hilarious.
Five game suspension for Draymond. Probably deserved. The NBA said it's due to his history. He was obviously stomping on Sabonis last spring, and I know just a million different incidents. I think he's been ejected from 19 games and suspended 5 times now in his career, which is just something.
Yeah. Two things. The first thing I'll say is that Klay Thompson started it. Klay Thompson is the one who I think he kind of like grabbed Jaden McDaniels' jersey trying to box out, which doesn't really make any sense.
Klay plays angry out there sometimes.
Yeah, and that's what he did, and that's really what started it. The other thing is that if you look for like a brief millisecond, Rudy Gobert has his forearm under Klay Thompson's neck. So I can see Draymond reacting to that. But also let's be honest. Let's actually say what the reality is. These two players do not like each other. Gobert and Draymond Green have been sending tweets back and forth against each other to each other. Last season, I forgot what exactly the situation was, but they were sending tweets back and forth to each other. I believe Draymond tweeted when Rudy got punched by Kyle Anderson. So obviously there's some bad blood there. And Draymond just saw his chance and I guess he took it. But I will also say
he was defending
his teammate. So it's not like it was just completely random. Gobert did look like he was getting ready to choke Klay Thompson.
He was getting ready to choke Thompson?
That's what it looked like. For a second, you could see like his forearm kind of go under Klay Thompson's chin. And I don't know if Draymond saw that and then in the millisecond was like, oh, okay, I'm going to choke you now. But either way, in all seriousness, though, if there are going to be scuffles and you're going to see the passion like this, I am going to completely change my mind on the midseason tournament. I think it's great. I think that players showing that they're passionate again is really what the league needs. Obviously, you don't want it to be like physical, like fist thrown or anything like that. But a little jawing back and forth, a little trash talk back and forth. Hopefully the NBA stops giving out texts for like stare downs and stuff like that, because that's just stupid. But if the midseason tournament is going to get the juices flowing for the players, then I am for it by all means. And I take everything I said back.
Well, Draymond's not suspended for the next in-season tournament game, so he won't be providing it. But I do laugh at that. You think this fight wouldn't have happened if it wasn't a stupid in-season tournament game? I don't think that had any factor.
I mean, I think that it definitely adds some motivation or some adrenaline to the situation.
It was 0-0.
Hey man, whoever scores that first point is probably gonna win. But the game before, they were also going back and forth. I believe that Anthony Edwards and Draymond Green had a few moments where they were talking trash to each other. So maybe having those games so close together probably wasn't the best idea. Obviously, scheduling. But it's just a lot of things that went into it. And honestly, what we got is something that we're going to be talking about for years, possibly even decades to come.
The previous one was when I think Ben Simmons put Cat in a headlock,
yes,
in a battle between Philly and Minnesota. So
it was Karl Anthony Towns versus Joel Embiid fighting that time.
Wolves haven't been a popular team until Edwards started emerging here. And let's talk about them first. I don't find the Warriors super interesting, but I do have something to say about them after. The Wolves, to me, and we did our over-under show here, and we can play it back. I was very high on them coming into this year, and now they're getting a better version of Rudy, which is the cherry on top here. 13-13-2 so far. They're the number one defense through this first stretch of the season here, thanks in part to him, and McDaniels, and some of these other defenders they have here. It's the first year, you know, I think people look back last year, Gobert changing teams for the first time. Mike Conley coming over at the trade deadline, which is always an adjustment. And then Edwards is so young here in year four. So he needed to take that step as the leader of this team. And he is now. Plus, Naz Reid broke his wrist before the playoffs last year, who's increasingly an important player for this group here. They're awesome. They had a super impressive win over the Celtics, which is what our audience probably recognizes most about them. Edwards hit three shots in a row in overtime, pulling up. He's aggressive. He's assertive, he's physical, and he's probably as athletic as any star in this league right now, along with the skill that's coming along to match it. I put him in this MVP conversation we had earlier, and if he's going to play at that level, this team's a real threat. Forget the playoffs and going deep. They're a threat to go to the finals, and I told you this too, Nate. Last year in those playoffs, they played the Nuggets much tougher than any other team with the two bigs there.
In the playoffs, we have constantly seen teams target Rudy Gobert because he cannot guard the perimeter.
It is a problem. Yeah.
For that reason, they are not championship contenders.
I don't think it's him, though. I think it's Cat.
I do. Well, Cat is also a cone on the perimeter on defense, too. And in the paint, he doesn't really give you much either. So that's just like a lose-lose situation. Gobert, I will admit, at least gives you something in the paint defensively. Not even, like, he's great in the paint defensively. I do want to go back to your previous point about Anthony Edwards, though. You mentioned everything that he does on the court. Off the court, he's really marketable, too. And because of that, he's really, really good for the league. I just wanted to say that. But overall, their chances, I think, second round exit, maybe a first round exit. Bobby, do you trust Karl Anthony Towns to be able to play finish six games without fouling out?
No, and it's been their problem. They've had two golden opportunities to win a playoff round here, and he's blown both of them for them. And I don't have any faith left in him. I love his game. I've been a big fan of him since he's come into the league, but he keeps letting down. And it's one thing to shoot bad, or like what we talked about with Embiid earlier, not play your best. But to not even be able to stay in the game, and this Celtics game was another example a couple weeks ago now. He had seven turnovers, 7 points, and he barely played because he fouled so much. So when you're not even on the floor, what's the point? Like, at least if you're on the floor, you're out there and you're trying and maybe you're struggling, but you're able to help. If you're just sitting on the sideline like he is often, and how many players, Nate, we talk about so many players week in and week out. Very few of them we say, man, he can't even stay on the court. He just fouls so much. That's like a college basketball problem.
Yeah, like the only one I can say with on the same level of talent as Karl Anthony Towns, maybe more talent, is Jaren Jackson Jr. That's like the only player with that level of talent that comes to mind that also just can't stay on the floor.
And those are probably the two guys in the league that you look at with the most skepticism in terms of, are they going to get it done in the playoffs? Because if you're not out there, you can't do anything. You can't even make a play here or there. So I'm closer than ever to saying they should trade him. I get that he has the talent upside and they want to make this whole double big thing work. At this point, I think that's how you cut your losses the best. Go out there, get a star who's making that kind of money before he makes this, you know, big leap to $50 million a year. You're probably not going to get a ton back given all the stuff we're talking about here. But maybe someone gets excited about him as a piece for their future. Would Houston? With New York, you know, they're always looking for a star. There's probably some team out there that would look at Towns and say, we can make this work. The talent's there. We'll give up a little something. Because what have we seen, Nate? Naz Reid can step into that spot, hit threes, attack the basket.
You called me a madman. You called me a madman. But I'm glad you finally came over to my side. Because I was telling you this all last season that Naz Reid and Karl Anthony Towns in terms of impact, really, what's the difference?
If Towns is going to foul like this, there really isn't much. Yeah. Plus, Towns' his impact more than ever is just putting up threes, which you can find guys who do that. They want to make $50 million a year.
And he has to do it because Gobert's in the paint. Yeah. Because you can't have two bigs in the paint anymore. It's not the 80s. But to go back to your question about who would possibly want him, I mean, maybe the Knicks, they seem like the type of team to do something stupid that way.
Let's call Dan.
Because like if the Wolves and the Knicks do this trade, they're both teams are in the same situation as before. Like then you have Randall and
they both have
Gobert,
that thing going on, because isn't Randall kind of in a Towns position with New York too?
The thing with Randall, I feel like, I mean, well, yeah, but I also feel like Randall, he just shoots too much. Like, he's someone who we should probably start trying to think about as a center for real. Because, like, more times than not, he's the biggest person on the court just in terms of, like, overall, like, strength. And he doesn't play like it at all. He takes too many jumpers. But I genuinely believe if Julius Randle converted to center and converted to being in the paint and banging down low, I think he'd be more effective, more efficient that way. He obviously can't because of Mitchell Robinson. And if he's traded to the Timberwolves, he can't because of Rudy Gobert. So it's the same situation all over again. And then maybe Karl Anthony Towns.
Talk about a guy who stinks in the playoffs.
Yeah, and he doesn't. I mean, it's literally just the same situation if you trade Karl Anthony Towns for Julius Randle. It's the same exact situation for both teams.
Yeah, I don't see that one. It'd have to be a surprise team.
Yeah. Maybe the Warriors. They seem like they can get that reclamation project going.
You take back Kuminga and Moody and these type of guys there and give that top end. Towns would look great out there shooting threes with those guys. You're right.
you might have to take the expiring contract in Chris Paul.
Draymond would kill Towns, though. He would talk about a headlock situation.
I mean, just understanding Draymond's intensity level. I don't think that Karl-Anthony Towns is really built for that. I mean, we saw how it worked with someone with a similar intensity level in Jimmy Butler, and that didn't really work well either. So, I mean, wow, like even that was kind of like you're going to be in the same situation. I can't really think of a team really that would.
They might just have to roll with them.
Yeah, I mean, how many years did he have left in his contract?
Towns?
Yeah,
he's just about to start his big one, making $50 million a year.
Yeah, no, I don't see it. Maybe Charlotte, I guess. I'm just throwing out teams. Like, I really can't think of a team that can that will be better with Karl-Anthony Towns. Maybe Brooklyn.
Brooklyn, you know, they're in a weird spot where they don't seem to want to trade for a star right now, which is strange because they don't own their own pick. So they don't have any incentive to be bad. I think they should be a little more aggressive with stuff like this. Towns isn't the right guy, though. Well, they do need offense. I don't know. I wouldn't snub my nose at anyone if I'm Brooklyn because they just don't have talent right now around Bridges or much talent anyway. They get some decent guys. Warriors, though, real quick, and we'll talk about one more thing here before we get out of here, a topic you love. I was talking to Joe Sway about this last night while we were down in Philly. Is their run over? And I think we had this conversation a little bit last year, too. Now they trade Poole. Paul's in the mix there, which has gotten off to a decent start. And he's come off the bench now, too, which, you know, I don't think people knew whether he would or not.
I did.
Curry's banged up, but he's Curry. He's going to be great. He's going to do his thing. Draymond, you know what he's going to give you. Klay, at this point, they have a tough decision coming up on his contract. Yeah. And he's just not the same guy anymore for obvious reasons. And then Wiggins is a guy who took you to the finals a couple years ago, so you like him. But the depth hasn't developed. Their young guys haven't come in through. They're trying again with this Trayce Jackson-Davis guy, who I like, and Pidzinski, I think his name is, who they drafted. So they really need some of these young guys to come through, and these aging veterans are not going in the right direction here. Even Curry, as great as he plays, is, you know, probably – starting to tail down in his prime here, you know, from a championship standpoint. I don't want to rule them out because I think it's always more fun if these guys are in it. But every year now, it just gets harder and harder to picture them being there with the Denvers, with the Celtics even at this point, the opposite conference. Phoenix, I think, would be a challenge for this team in a series. Dallas. I mean, how are you going to keep up with Dallas' scoring if you're Golden State, which is crazy to think about, but that's the reality right now. This team lost to the Lakers last year, and the Lakers, they had their run, they had their momentum, but it wasn't that great of a Lakers team, and they kind of took it to them. So is this team's window over, and is there anything they can do to save it?
They need to find a way to get value for Chris Paul. I never really understood getting Chris Paul in the first place.
Well, I wanted them to get Holiday when he was available, but
Drew Holiday, I would have liked that a lot. But I never really understood it in the first place. I understand you have to get rid of Poole for the culture, but I think that around the league, I felt like Poole had more value than what they ended up getting for him. And Chris Paul is a declining player. Sure, you have that expiring contract, which you might be able to trade. That might be Chris Paul's only value, honestly, just the expiring contract. I mean, obviously, he gives you the leadership, he gives you an efficient player, but in terms of on the court or in terms of in your future plans, the expiring contract is probably the most valuable thing that Chris Paul can give you. So I don't know. I guess I don't really see Klay Thompson returning back to prime Klay Thompson. Draymond Green is clearly declining. Still a great player, but declining. Steph Curry, we haven't seen it yet, but I do expect to see it maybe in the next 2, 3, 4 years. And like you said, none of their young guys have really panned out. I can't really think of a young Golden State Warrior that I'm like, yeah, I'm excited to see the future.
Even Poole at his best. I didn't love his game.
Yeah, I always thought it was foolish to put Jordan Poole in the same conversation with Tyrese Maxey because I thought Tyrese Maxey was going to explode.
Who did that? And,
people on Twitter were doing it. It was always like, who's going to be better? Jordan Poole, Tyrese Maxey, and Bones Highland. Like, those were always the three that were always like put together. And it just Tyrese Maxey was always the clear answer to me. But yeah, I don't, maybe you could try to trade Clay, but yeah, they seem to be stuck. And also another thing too, Andrew Wiggins needs to step up. He so far this season, he's kind of been okay, but on their finals run, he was amazing. He was tremendous. And we need that again for them to even really be a contender for Western Conference Finals.
I like that you bring up Maxey though, because if we're looking back, and now it's been 3 years since this 2020 draft, the pandemic one here, such a consequential draft for the direction of the league here. And a number of the teams we've talked about tonight, Edwards, perfect pick for the Wolves. They nailed it. Wiseman. And they should have went with Ball. And I said it back then. He could have been that next up-and-coming point guard behind Curry. And Wiseman just flamed out in Golden State. That's the guy who really killed them, that pick there. Patrick Williams didn't work. Koro didn't work. Cavs are still looking for a wing all these years later. Okongwu, decent. But, again, they're stuck in the middle. And they're kind of that. He's kind of emblematic of that. Hayes, killer pick for the Pistons. Just yep. They're still looking for a point guard all these years later. Knicks, that was an opportunity for them. They find an interior star, and Obi Toppin was not it. Avdija, another bad Wizards pick, and they are where they are now. Suns couldn't draft, so they had to do what they've done. Vassell was good.
Yes.
Halliburton.
Amazing.
Amazing, but they traded him.
Yeah. I mean, well, it makes it's the one situation where it makes sense, because De'Aaron Fox is also amazing. And I believe he came back maybe 2-3 days ago. And I was listening to Mark Jones on the broadcast, and he was basically saying, like, it looks like a completely different team with Fox in the lineup versus him out of the lineup. So, when we get back to MVP, maybe in, 30, 40, 50 games later, and hopefully Fox is still healthy over that stretch, I think that we can probably make a case for Fox being a top 10 MVP candidate because of what he means to that team.
Lewis
has I don't know who that is.
Yeah, he tore his ACL, so he hasn't even been out there much. Neesmith, one of many bad picks for the Celtics over this stretch that sent them in the trade direction like the Suns. Anthony, decent, but they're still stuck in the middle, point guard issues. Stort, Detroit, big reason they are where they are. You know, he hasn't been bad, but he hasn't been great either. Poku, one of a few swings and misses for the Thunder here, even though they've had some good picks. Green, decent, but they are not good enough at the wing, and he's a big reason why. Bay, another Detroit pick, didn't really work. Achiuwa, hasn't really worked. They trade him for Lowry. Maxey, think of all the teams we just mentioned there that passed up on Maxey. Yeah. And that was a key one for the Sixers there. And we can go on and on and on. The picks that really didn't matter there. But that was a pivotal draft. You know, a lot of teams that if they hit, they'd be in a much different place right now, for better and for worse.
For sure.
So let's go to our final topic here. Big shout out to HelloFresh, who signed on for a year here with the Garden Report. And they have an awesome offer right now. One of my favorite sponsors ever, truly. Make cooking fun. I do love cooking to begin with, but they make it all the more easier, flexible, enjoyable, and affordable. You don't have to go to the supermarket, waste your time there looking for stuff. You don't have to go to a restaurant, which is just getting absurd with each passing month here. Going out to eat is just ridiculously expensive at this point. So HelloFresh.com/CLNSfree. How about that? For making things more affordable. Free breakfast for life with any order right now. You're going to be able to add breakfast items on for free with your order. So you're going to be able to do your meat-based packages, plant, fish. They have different themes, and they're all customizable. They can come to your door whenever you need them, different time spans. And even if you have dietary restrictions or just want to shake things up, dozens and dozens of recipes, they're seasonal. So you can head over there and see what's available right now, HelloFresh.com/CLNSfree, and get free breakfast for life as long as you're using HelloFresh, which is awesome. Waiting on my next package coming through right now. Now that I'm back home for a little bit here. After this Memphis trip this week, so I'm looking forward to that. Thanksgiving next week as well. Some great time at home to cook and just spend some time with family and lay down ingredients, prepackaged ingredients and instructions here, all in the HelloFresh kit that comes right to your door. So it's a great product. And again, support the Garner Report and CLNS Media here by trying out this offer, HelloFresh.com/CLNSfree. See if it's for you. And a quick shout out as well to oddsr.com/Celtics. Get 30 days of their free AI learning that's going to tell you what to bet, what not to bet, and some risky bets that might not be a great idea, but you can give them a try and get 30 days free of that at oddsr.com/Celtics. All right, Nate, you're saying it's early, but it hasn't been good. Harden, 0-5 with the Clippers. Doesn't look good physically right now. It doesn't seem like he's in the best shape. And as I always said, it's going to be very difficult here to make four ball handlers, four star players on offense come together and make this work, especially without the right role players. They lost Mason Plumlee as well, I think, since we last talked. They're going to sign Daniel Tice, who I like. But right now, it's all about Harden. Can he get it together? Can he play at a high level? Can he keep this thing together? Because honestly, right now, Nate, they're playing to keep this whole thing together here. I don't know if Kawhi would leave. I don't know if George would leave. But they're both on expiring deals right now. And this thing's going in the wrong direction. I mean, this is the worst this team has looked since they've gotten this whole thing together here with Kawhi and George and all of them.
Yeah. Well, first of all, everybody's on an expiring deal. Westbrook is also on an expiring deal, and James Harden is also on an expiring deal. The thing that was emphasized or seems to be emphasized for the four stars is sacrifice. And I think they are sacrificing with each other, but I don't think they're sacrificing in the ways where they should be. I feel like they're very hesitant on offense. They're sacrificing their touches, trying to avoid stepping on each other's toes. And that's going to work itself out. That's just basketball. That's just how it is. We've seen that with so many different teams where, like, even like LeBron or Miami, like there was a little, it looked kind of weird at first, and then they ended up winning championships, and I can just go on and on and on. But what I'm saying is that eventually the pecking order in terms of scoring option is going to work itself out.
So what should it be?
But what I'm saying, let me finish first. What I'm saying is, the fact that they lost Rocco, they lost Batum, those are guys that are like hustle guys, like we said earlier. And I think sacrificing means that they cannot be in a stars mentality anymore. They have to be the hustle guys as well, on top of scoring and stuff like that. And I haven't really seen much of that, and I'd like to see more of that trying to get the 50-50 ball. Russ is doing that. Like, Russ has always done that. But in terms of Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, especially James Harden, seeing them sacrifice more in terms of the little things, the things that don't involve scoring or getting points. I think that's something that's probably where they need to focus on the most. The Zubac fit is kind of weird to me. Sometimes you can't really run pick and roll with him because he's either not expecting the ball, or he catches the ball and then he immediately panics and throws it into a turnover. What I think they really need is they need to get a young, energizing big. And Bones Highland...
Is Daniel Tice in that category?
No. but Bones Highland seems to be, once again, out of the rotation. Like we saw in Denver, he was out of the rotation because they were trying to win a championship. And this seems to be another situation for him. And I'm curious to see what the Clippers can get from Bones Highland that will fill in the holes that they need. But in terms of the four stars, I mean, it hasn't looked as good. James Harden has said that he isn't in the best shape, which that is his fault. But that being said, I think that offensively, in terms of the pecking order, the pecking scoring order, I think that's going to work itself out. And you did ask me what it should be. And right now, I think it should be from first option to fourth option: Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, James Harden, Russell Westbrook. But I think that James Harden and Russell Westbrook should have the ball in their hands the most because they are the playmakers.
Yeah, and you have to consider at some point, we've talked about it, sending one of them on the bench just for more balance, get man out there as that hustle piece. I think he's best suited to play with these best players here and try to let, I think Russ is the answer, lead that bench unit. It's not going to be Harden. Certainly here, and I know Russ doesn't love that, but
I think it has to be Harden.
It's a matter of sacrifice. Harden to the bench?
I think it has, because
like the old days?
Russ, PG, and Kawhi, when you look at the on-off splits, those three together are still really, really good. The issue is, how do we incorporate Harden into our offense, and how do we make Harden fit into our
offense? The biggest problem with Harden, I think, and maybe if he does get in the shape, he's capable of it to some degree, but he just can't be Houston Harden anymore. I don't think it's in him.
Yeah.
Even if you sent him to the bench and said shoot a ton, I don't know if he can do it.
Yeah, I think what the Harden that they need is the 76ers Harden, who can get you 20 and 10. I think the assists are the most important thing for me. Kawhi Leonard, as we know, he hasn't been automatic recently, but he's usually automatic. Paul George has his moments when he's automatic as well. Russell Westbrook, you can use him in different ways. But I think the real thing is, who is going to get everybody else open? And
you might be right about the big man thing.
What Tyronn Lue has said is they want to run the offense through Harden, and Harden, one, has to get back into basketball shape. And once he's able to do that, then we have to see. I don't think he still has the same burst, but if he can just get paint touches and then get Paul George and Kawhi Leonard open threes, I think that's unstoppable.
Yeah, you compare this team to the Celtics now, who we opened up with, and all the differences between them, I think, explain everything going on here. Like, White and Holiday, those guys are going to set a million screens, they're going to defend like crazy, and they're going to support those two stars at the wing spot with passing and just doing the little things. And that's not, you know, I know Russ has gotten a little better at it here of taking on that role player's mentality, but it's not natural for him. Harden is not going to do those things. And then you look at the big man situation, Zubac versus like a Porzingis, it's so much less dynamic, and he's a good big man, but I think you're right that he's not someone who's going to accentuate Harden's skills in the pick and roll. So maybe that's the kind of move you make, flipping Zubac for a different kind of big, or whatever you have left to offer for more of a rim running guy. And Robert Williams would have been a great fit here, but he's down for the year now in Portland.
Unfortunately.
He's not going to be able to help anybody. So, I don't know. I don't like this team, especially in a tough conference. Like, I don't know if they're this bad, but they're not up there with the contenders right now. And as they go through more bumps and bruises of trying to figure this out, it could go in the wrong direction, considering that everybody has that exit at the end of the year if they want to get the hell out of here. So, not a great time to be a Clippers fan, even though you have all this star power here. You want to have these guys in like 2015, 2016, not 2015.
They win like five championships in a row, honestly.
All right, that's our show today. Good talking, Nate. We had a lot to get through here. It's been a fun season so far, and it's all going to continue. We'll have post-game coverage tomorrow on the Garden Report of Celtics-Raptors remote here, another in-season tournament game coming up. More Dome Theories to come as well. Once the travel starts dying down a little bit, everybody will be home for Thanksgiving and all that too. So we'll all get to catch up here in the group chat edition of Dome Theory as everyone starts to get into the holiday mode here a little bit. We will be in Memphis, Nate, on Sunday for Celtics Grizzlies. And of course, Marcus Smart's hurt.
Oh, that sucks.
So we'll see him. I'm sure we'll get to talk to him. But man, that Grizzlies team, Nate, they could have been one of the stories we talked about tonight. The most disappointing team in the league.
John Morant isn't playing. Steven Adams is out. I expected it, honestly. They don't,
1-8.
Yeah, I mean, again, understanding how important Steven Adams is to that team, and also understanding they don't have their star.
They're 2-9 now, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's to be expected. Desmond Bane is a fine player. Can't be your number one scoring option.
Can they survive long enough for Ja to get back and get them back in the mix?
I think ceiling for them right now is playing and make the playoffs and be a dangerous team in the playoffs.
They might have to make a move too with Adams hurt. We'll see. Yeah. Man, very disappointing. Feel for Smart too. Left ankle injury. Didn't look good. So another loss for them potentially here alongside Brandon Clark, who tore his Achilles, Adams, who's out for the year, and Ja Morant, who's out till late December. So
Brandon Clark's ugly. Another one very important to that team.
I'm looking forward to Memphis, though. If anyone is from there or, has gone there, send me some recommendations. And I think the weather's a little bit better than it's been here in Boston, too. So
Did you pay $4 for your tickets?
No, I'm going to cover the game. But yeah, they got $4 tickets. I saw that. Oh, man. Well, Celtics in a better place after these moves, it looks like, for now. And we'll see where it all goes. Nate Sperling, he hosts the Cat Podcast, reviewing music. You're going to review the Andre 3000 Flute album.
I don't even know how you do that. you see right here when he really blew into the flute, like that's really where the soul, like, yeah, like I don't know. I'm sure it's gonna be great. I am interested to listen to it, though.
I'm gonna give it a listen tonight. Pink Pantherist too, I gave that a little listen today. Yeah. Didn't love it, but it had some fun moments on there.
Bobby, no comment. You got it, Bobby. That album was musically, if you're just talking about musicality, amazing. If you're talking about it's just the fact that she produces the music and the way that she uses her vocals, the way that she's able to layer her vocals on top of each other to create the mix that she's able to create, it shows that she has a really, really attentive ear, and it just shows her overall talent. Like I really, besides the first feature, Rima on the first track, his vocals not being as turned up as the rest of the album is. Besides that, I don't really have any critiques on the album, but you guys can go watch that on Old Milk Media.
Oh, is that out?
Catch it on YouTube. Yeah, it's out.
Nice. Yeah, I'll put that in the description. And Drake has a little thing coming out tonight, right? Like a couple songs.
Yes. Oh my God, it's Thursday.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have just watched me realize that today is Thursday.
The year is flying, baby. We'll be doing the best music of the year here, as well as over on the Cap as well, too. I have a lot of stuff I like this year after a slow start, so we'll see what else comes out. But I think I'm starting to formulate my best songs of the year, best albums of the year, all that. So we'll get into that soon. And once again, he's Nate. I'm Bobby. We'll talk to you again here soon on Dome Theory. Subscribe, Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, all those things. And check us out on YouTube as well when we go live here. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Garden Report tomorrow night. And then on to Memphis. We'll see you down there.